Blog Talk Radio.
Broadcasting from Atlanta, Georgia, this is The Bright Side with Technisha.
A daily broadcast on real life issues that will keep you motivated.
And now, here's your host, Technisha.
Good afternoon, everyone, and today is March the 21st, 2014, and you are here tuning in to another episode of The Bright Side with Technisha, and I hope everyone is having a glorious day today, and if not, it has not ended, so we're going to continue on the right path, keep God first, and keep our ears and eyes open. Today, I have Erica A. Murray, who is an entrepreneur, a mentor, an educator, and a public speaker. She also has a book out called CEO to the Power of You. Good afternoon, Erica. How are you?
I am doing so well, and I'm delighted to be here on this show to share some insightful information.
And we are ready to hear. Now, unfortunately, we know it's a little chilly in Atlanta. Erica's in the good old, she's in the heat right now, so she's feeling really good.
Absolutely.
We need that warmth here. But officially, it is spring, so just hold on, everybody. Just hold on. You'll be able to show your toes and your legs very soon. So, Erica, you have so many hats, and you are a very talented woman, and I admire you so much. And then, as well as being a black woman, that's gorgeous and black. That's all too much in one. Powerful. But Erica,
you know what, Tignesia, I'm not responsible for that. You know, God kind of put the package together.
Yeah. Hey, and that's a good thing. He put it together, and he made you to the point where you are. Erica, can you tell us a little bit about your background?
Sure. You know, I have like you said, many hats. I have a very diverse background. I believe that life is what we make it. I don't believe that there are any restrictions, and believing that particular concept, you know, I started off in real estate. I had a couple of real estate brokerages, and once I mastered that, I elevated myself to becoming a real estate broker and opened up a couple of companies there, actually one in Georgia. From that particular point, I moved towards construction. And so I started building homes in lower income areas, and from that, I went into real estate development and writing real estate development plans for resorts in the Caribbean. And then, you know, I've kind of gotten involved in a lot of other things as far as garment manufacturing companies and some other things as far as entrepreneurial. So I would consider myself as a serial entrepreneur. I've studied, of course, school. I have an undergraduate in political science and history. I have a master's in public administration and did PhD studies in international business. So along with just being a serial entrepreneur, I not only took the theory from the classroom, but I made it practical.
See, that's a good thing. Now, Erica, now you have this book out, CEO to the Power of You. What is this book all about, and who is it targeting?
Okay, this book, now this is the interesting part about the target market. The book is for everyone. It's not any one individual that this book was designed for, because I've written a book in such a basic language that anybody can actually read it, understand it, and enjoy it. The reason I wrote the book is because in my travels around the world, so many people were asking me so many questions about being successful. How do you do international business? Just everything related to business. And one of the things that people have to understand is in order for you to be successful in business, you have to be successful with yourself first. So the book CEO to the Power of You is geared towards helping an individual become one with themselves, meaning being CEO of the most powerful corporation in the world, which is you, before you try to lead something else. Because, again, as leaders, we have people who are following. So we need to make sure that the leadership skills that we're providing to them, that there is something that we would like to be reproduced in society. I've broken the book up into three different parts. We talk about success, what it is to you. We talk about changing your thinking, gaining control of your thoughts, and, of course, creating a corporate life structure. So the book pretty much teaches you business as well as teaches you how to organize your life as a business.
Now, when we think of CEO, we usually think of, I don't know, maybe somebody big like Donald Trump or something owning the company, doing it all. But it's really much more to that, isn't it, Erica?
It's absolutely much more to that. Just because you have a figure, a public figure, for example, you utilize Donald Trump. Donald Trump is a figure. He does not run the day-to-day operations of his company. But what he does have is the ability to have this holistic approach about life as well as his business, because he has to be able to trust, he has to be able to delegate, and he has to be able to lead, and he has to be able to lead in a decisive manner. That is no different than what we do every day in our lives. Every day in your life, you have to lead your household. If you're supervising people on your job, you're leading them. You know, you're delegating responsibility in the house. If you have kids, this is your week for the kitchen. This is your week for the bathroom, so on and so forth. So the 1%ers in our country, they're no different than the 99% of the other 99% of the population. It's just that they choose to take a set of principles, make them a part of their lifestyle, and reproduce them over and over again in whatever it is that they do. So when we understand totally who we are able to do so much more, and we're able to make a greater impact.
Okay. Now, Erica, you're well known for the global business consultant, and you have worked in Jamaica before. Do you still work with the Jamaican government?
I do from time to time consult with them if needed. I've done a lot of work with their airport system as far as the construction side, and I've worked with a lot of the lay people in Jamaica, helping them to elevate their businesses and to strengthen their businesses so that they'll be sustainable over time.
Okay. Now, I'm not trying to jump all over the place. I'm sorry, listeners. It's just that I get so excited and I love to ask questions. We know the American market for almost everything is huge, but it's not large enough for many entrepreneurs. So how can one take their company global?
Well, here's the thing. Your company being global really is going to be determined by your mindset. Some people don't think that very big. They don't think very big of their business. So if you don't think very big of your business, to even expand yourself to the global market is beyond your thought process. Let's go back in time when we were in elementary school. We would have our teachers tell us to just give us a blank sheet of paper and say, draw whatever you want. And then, we have kids who say, I'm going to be Superman, I'm going to be Wonder Woman, I'm going to be the president, because their dreams were so big, it wasn't confined to the classroom. But as we get older, it seems like that thought process and imagination shrinks. And what you're going to have to do to have that global impact is you're going to have to go back to being that kid in the third grade or that kid in kindergarten with this massive imagination. And once you have that massive imagination, it becomes how to achieve the goal. So therefore, you start to develop a plan as to how I'm going to accomplish the goal. But the thought is in the head first. And once you get that, that's why it's important to really resolve within yourself and to bring order to yourself. Sometimes as we get older, we believe because we're older, because we have the ability to make our own decisions, it gives us the ability to not live within a set of boundaries.
Okay.
And whenever we decide not to live within boundaries, that means we're living in chaos, because there's no order without boundaries. That's why people are successful many times getting from elementary school to junior high, from junior high to high school. Your parents are saying, go to bed at 8:30, no TV after 7. It's boundaries that are being set. Once you get old enough to do whatever you want to, everything goes haywire in many instances because you evade boundaries. So, again, in order for a person to take their business global, they have to have an expansive imagination. They have to have the ability to be structured, disciplined, and organized, write a plan, and then execute the plan.
Yes, because you have to do your market research. You got to know if that product would sell well in that country or culture, right, Erica?
Absolutely. Now, that's the other part of it. That's going a little bit in depth into your plan. But you definitely want to make sure you do proper due diligence every company does proper due diligence. Your larger companies call it R&D departments, which is research and development. It's the same thing, due diligence. They're doing the research to ensure that their product can do well in a particular market or their service. Now, here's the other side of that. My brain functions just a little bit differently.
Okay.
I have to bet my service or my product can survive in any culture. It is in how I introduce it to them whether or not they'll actually partake in what it is that I'm offering. It's the introduction.
Okay.
It's the production.
Wow.
It takes us back to the mantra. Your first impression is a lasting impression. You know.
Yes.
So your first impression on the market is what they're going to remember. So if you go into the market raggedy, if you go into the market and you have horrible encounters with people and you don't handle it in a customer service manner, that's the first impression. So you and I both know word of mouth travels faster than any marketing advertisement we can put together.
Yes. And it just makes me think that you can't assume because something works in America that it's going to work everywhere. Because you can't ignore the culture differences that shape the marketplace. You really can't.
You cannot ignore cultural differences. And in a corporate environment, cultural diversity, you cannot ignore that. And that's why I said it can survive. It depends on how you present it. You know, it can work. How am I going to present it? Again, in China, where I do have a garment factory there, in China what happens is, you know, they like to take breaks every day for lunch. Pretty much everything closes down from 12 to 2. Because, and I say everything, it's just that you can go to one place and they're closed from 12 to 1, and you can go to another place, they're closed from 1 to 2. So just the window 12 to 2, things are closed because they believe in taking breaks. In America, we'll look up and it's 5 o'clock and we're saying, oh, my goodness, I didn't take a lunch break. It doesn't work there. So when I first visited and I was getting ready to enter into contract negotiations when I first visited China, and right when we were getting ready to sign the agreement, they're like, let's take a break. I'm like, what? You know, but in our head in the U.S., we'll take a break or go eat after we sign a contract. In their world, everything stops. We'll get back to that after we take a break. Now, they will work late. So we have to know the cultural differences. We have to know to whom are we going to target in that particular area. Are we going to target women? Are we going to target young men? Who are we targeting with the product or service? And then, of course, how we're going to make this product or service appealing to them. And here in the U.S., most companies are targeting women, especially when it comes to things for grocery items, because they know women do the bulk of the shopping. So everything is targeted towards what will trigger a woman to buy. And that's the goal when you're going into another market. What's going to trigger this culture to buy this American-made product?
And Erica, is it hard to find a foreign distributor?
What
yes,
do you
ma'am.
Mean as far as product distribution or making the
yes.
product? Give me a little bit more background on that. What do you mean?
Yes, as in finding one for your product.
No, that's not a difficult task.
Right.
What's a difficult task is finding one that's going to provide the quality that you desire. You have to be very specific when you're working. Let's just say most of the things we have in America is made in China. Well, you have to make sure that the specifications that you give that particular factory production company, I mean, you do not miss anything because they're going to make it the way you told them to make it. If there is two steps missed, your product is going to miss two steps. So that's not difficult. You just want to make sure you do your research. You make sure that you are registered legally. You make sure that you have the proper legal documents. If something is not produced properly, do you have a clause in your contract that says you can return it and they replace it? Or for every chargeback, they'll actually double the money or whatever? Because you have to make certain that you enter into an agreement that's going to strengthen your business. The one thing you do not want to happen is for people to say, I keep buying this product, sending it back, it breaks. They sent me another one, yes, but it broke. So you don't want that to happen. So you got to make certain that you find a company that can produce a quality product and that you give them the right specifications for the product.
Okay. Now, that makes perfect sense. You don't go in there blindfolded. You got to go in with your eyes open.
So, and then the other thing, let me say this to Nisha before we move on. The other thing is, don't go in with this concept that everything that's made in China is cheap, because it's not. What happens with a lot of our major corporations is they operate on budgets. So they want a certain production for their budget. I believe it was one of the toy companies. I'm not sure if it was Mattel or one of them a few years back had an issue with some toys they had gotten from China. The pieces were breaking off, so on and so forth, and the children were getting injured. Here's the deal. They probably gave, and this is not a factual statement. This is just an observation from my side. That's my disclaimer. It appears as if, here's the budget, I need 5,000 or 100,000 toys, make it work.
Okay.
When you do that, then you'll get a product, and we have to realize that small and medium-sized enterprises, we do not have the capital in many instances to make all of that bad press go away quickly. See, your larger companies can do something bad. Most people probably forgot all about the toys falling apart, children being injured, and they're still buying their product.
Mm-hmm.
When you go to a foreign country to have something done, do not make price the main reason if you want to secure and maintain your clientele. Do not make that. Make quality the target. And whatever
okay.
the price is, people will pay for quality.
Yeah, most definitely. I couldn't agree more. So, Erica, what made you actually go global?
You know, the interesting part of it is, again, I said I was in real estate, and in real estate, everything is location, location, location. I actually went on a trip to celebrate someone's birthday, and we were in Jamaica, and the driver that I had began to ask what it is that I do for a living, began to share with him. He began to share things that were happening in Jamaica, and I took advantage of the opportunity. I went back after that trip. He was my driver again, and I began to incorporate a company there. And I learned, you know, of course, when I went back to the U.S., let me say this, I did do research on the developments, what was happening, government funding was set aside, how can I utilize my service to help move the government forward, how can I present that to them, or them to actually buy into what it is that I can do for their country. So I went to the country, and I did it the right way. I started registering, because if I earn money there, I need to pay taxes there. And I just went and moved forward from there. It was just the opportunity. And what happens, or should I say what fails to happen, is people fail to take, you know, they fail to take advantage of an opportunity in a lifetime of that opportunity. Opportunities are not going to always be there for us. It's called an opportunity. So you have to take advantage of it when it presents itself. And I got in at the right time. Things started thriving, and it's just been an uphill ever since.
Wow. And see, that's a good thing. And you are so right about that. Opportunity only knocks one time, and if you don't catch it, it's going to fly right by you.
Absolutely.
This is what I would like to know. How's the reception of doing business, like in other countries, for us? Like if you're trying to go to another country, how is that reception? Is it good, or will it hinder you?
Here's the thing about that. Again, it comes with studying the market. I believe that when we're in Asia, things are great, okay? The reception is very warm. We're very well respected. It's almost as if, and I've said this in other interviews, it's almost as if Americans walk on water. And you know, you have the opportunity to get in there and do business because they're open arms. When you're in the Caribbean culture, I find that you have to really adjust yourself. Your motive for doing business in their country has to be pure. They're going to try you to see if the motive is pure. So they don't like the fact that you will come in and want to take over in their country. So if you go there in that manner, you're going to be rejected. When you go to, let's say, the United Kingdom, London specifically, you get a warm welcome there. You're very well respected. But at the same time, many British people believe that Americans are which I was called by a colleague braggadocious. And I laughed, and I said to her, you know, I believe that there may be some Brits that are braggadocious as well. I say, but I believe that you're misconstrued. Most American business people are not braggadocious. We're confident in what it is that we know. And because we're in a capitalistic society, we tend to move quicker because we know that the opportunity is not going to always be there because there's someone else out there as hungry as we are. Whereas in the UK, specifically London, I've found that it's a slower pace. And it's not an absolute for all business people. It's just that they're not as capitalistic as we are. You know, in the U.S., you know, everybody's in this race. And if someone falls down, nobody stops to say, hey, are you okay? You know, do we need to pick you up? Do you need some help? That doesn't happen here in the business world. But there, they are slower. So to me, it appears as if they're a little bit behind, although there are some people who are very aggressive in going out and get what they need. So what I would say to are people receptive of us? Yes. How you present yourself, what your motives are, will be observed and watched.
Wow. But, Erica, you now thinking about that, you made me also think about this as well. How is it that when most foreigners, they come here, they're able to sell their product better in the United States? They're more successful in marketing to me.
Well, okay, let's deal with that particular situation.
Okay.
When foreigners come to our country and they open a business, they are considered, the term is FDI, they're considered foreign direct investors. They're coming to do something in our country that's going to move our economy, and they're going to be able to pay taxes to our government. The problem that I have with a lot of business people and just lay people, well, you know, I don't understand how they could come to our country and get this, 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 and this. Well, when I went to Jamaica and start a company, I get that, that, and that, too. So it's you have to understand investing away from home is good. I'm not saying take the jobs away from home. Investing and expanding abroad, it's very good. It's good for their economy, but it's also good for your bottom line in business. And anyone who's in business understands that the bottom line is what garners the sustainability and the longevity of any company. So with that stated, for more options of going abroad, and then when some of them come to our country, the products and services that they're selling, or let's just say the products, not services as in so much, those products that they're selling are infringing upon intellectual property rights in our country. And the reason why they're thriving and earning money is because many Americans who cannot afford to get those high-dollar items opt into buying replicas that has a branding on it that's been stolen. So that's where a lot of them are profiting from because their relatives back in their native country, they're part of these factories that are making these items, shipping them over, so on and so forth. So there are not that many Asian companies, major companies, that are doing things the right way. When people start addressing how they come in and get nail salons, well, they get nail salons because they have what is called WASCAs. And this concept of WASCAs is whereby they pool their money together, and they don't need to go to the bank to borrow. They're borrowing their monies from their circuit of individuals, and they'll pay the money back to that circuit so someone else can start a business. So it's not necessarily our government providing everything for them. They're ingenuous in some of their tactics to obtain money. They're very, they don't need a lot to survive. They'll live four or five families in a home. And that's no issue because they see a bigger picture. So when we look at other people coming in and what they do, we have to look at everything overall. We can't pass judgment on them because this particular lifestyle is something that they've lived in their native country. So therefore, they're able to advance with it when there's more opportunities.
Yeah. You see, and then also, I think it just comes in with the mind frame. See, that some of them do think that Americans can be lazy, and sometimes we do take advantage of a good thing. And I always learn, when you go to these other countries, you don't appreciate what you have here until you actually go somewhere else and step outside your box. And then, like you also mentioned, we have to get out that mind frame. Oh, they come over here, they get all this, and they get all that. No, see, that's why you can't win. You can't get successful because you're in that mind frame. It's not that they always get everything. It's just that you have to step up your game. They don't come over here to play. They already come educated. They did their homework. And that's the same as you were saying before. You have to do your homework before you go to their country. You have to know what you're getting into.
Absolutely. You have to do the research. Oftentimes, you know, some people don't want to do research. I don't think it's reserved to any specific ethnicity. Sometimes people just don't want to do the work that goes into the preparation part of getting somewhere. We have a country that has created a sense of entitlement. And when people don't get something, they want to blame it on everyone else. There's a certain responsibility that each of us have to our own success. Unfortunately, you know, this is a webinar with a gentleman by the name of Deshaun Taylor, a really good friend of mine that I really respect. He's an author. And Deshaun and I did this business in books, this webinar. And when we started doing the research, the numbers of individuals who read was pretty much startling. And when we broke it down to ethnicities, it was even more amazing. But there's at least 52 to 53% of the people who do not read a book after they leave high school. They don't read anymore. Well, that's what separates the 1% of America from the 99%. They're reading information that's teaching them how to do what it is they're doing. They never arrive because they're constantly learning. That's where a lot of people fail. They stop learning. And when you stop learning, you stop living. And when you stop living, you are existing. And when you are existing, you are present without participation.
Erica?
Are you with me, Tanisha?
I'm sorry for the disconnection. Please forgive me. Someone was calling in on the line there. And by them upgrading the software on the iPhone, I accidentally ended up hanging you up. I'm sorry.
Okay. Yeah.
All this technology.
That's okay. I was just merely saying that, you know, people have to continue to read. Because
yes.
If you don't continue to read, you're not learning. That is the only thing that separates the 1% from the 99%. There's a constant learning process that's going on. And I went on further to say, you know, when we did this study in preparation for our business and books webinar, we found that more than 50% of the people who graduate from high school don't ever read a book again. And that's amazing. And so they're functioning in an environment whereby there's a certain group of people who are moving forward. And then everybody's saying, why can't I move forward? Because you're not investing in you. Those individuals are investing in themselves. They're reading. And I went on further to say that when you are not reading, that means you're not learning. If you're not learning, that means you're not growing. And then when you decide to not learn and not live, you're existing. And when you're existing, it means you're present without participation. So basically, you're in a state of stagnation, and then you're angry with everyone else who's passing you up.
Exactly. And you can't get mad about that. You have to do it.
No.
Now, I was interested in international business. Can you define that for us, Erica?
Sure. International business is any involvement in business that is outside of your home country. And
okay.
Let me say this. Any involvement in legal business that is outside of your country, that would be international business. I just wanted to make certain that I specified exactly what I meant in that definition.
Well, I don't want you going to jail now.
No, that's not a place for anybody like me. So pretty much that's the extent of the international business side of it. Just the ability to engage in driving other economies as well as your economy outside of your country if you are a business owner, entrepreneur.
Okay. Now, when you went to, before you went to Jamaica, Erica, did you research about it before going in or any other countries that you went to, like Asia?
Well, here's the deal. When I went to Jamaica, remember, I went on a vacation. But when I decided to go back, because I did get the driver's information, when I decided to go back, I did research before I went over there to ensure, okay, what is the cost for me to invest in incorporate in this particular country? What type of tax benefits and breaks will I get as a foreign direct investor there? What is the cost for me to travel back and forth? Is it something affordable? Is it easy to get there? Is it like, do I have to take, you have to go to three different countries to get there? You need to be able to identify those things, because all of that becomes a part of the money that you're investing in that particular country. So when I did go back, I had a plan. I knew where I wanted to be, and I had the right driver to introduce me to the right people.
See, that's a good thing. See, you never know who's in your path, and you never underestimate anyone. Look what you said, the driver. And you went, I mean, in my mind, I'm going to think, oh, the driver knows this or that. And that's who actually be knowing, the ones who don't have on the suits and ties.
Yeah, that's the ones that are driving the ones around in suits and ties. This is the person, mm-hmm. It's kind of like even at the hotel. You know, people, they shrug off their bellman. The bellman knows everybody. They know who's staying in the hotel. You cannot discount the help. And I don't know why people do that, because just because someone is the story a long time ago, a street sweeper, be the best street sweeper you can possibly be. Be the best at what you do, but respect everyone's job, because what everyone is trying to do is earn a living for themselves and their family. And anything that a person does to do that is reputable.
Exactly, because it's one guy on my job, he works as a bellman, because I work for Marriott, Atlanta Airport, and he knows any and everything that you want to know. And you would never think mm-hmm. that, because he's not the boss or that, but he has more knowledge than most of us on there.
Absolutely, and he has more knowledge of the boss, because the boss, you know, in many instances, you're at the hotel, but the manager of the hotel, the general manager, he doesn't know who's checking in unless it's like a really, really big celebrity. You know, he may get the memo, we need to isolate this side of the hotel, so on and so forth. But that everyday business person that no one knows who's a billionaire, your bellman knows him.
Mm-hmm. It's almost made me think about one story a young lady had gave me. She said this one guy, everybody ignored, because he came in, looked like he was homeless at the restaurant, and no one wanted to serve him. And someone in particular ended up serving him. And he ended up, I forgot how much he left to Erica. I think it was $1,000. It had to be around. It was a good amount of money that he left her. And he had money, but no one got that but her, because she had it in her heart just to serve him. She didn't think like that. She didn't prejudge him or nothing.
Because you never know who you're dealing with. And that's why, you know, it's important, if you are a business owner, for you to take advantage of talking to everyone. I talk to everyone. I don't care who it is. And my friends, you know, they joke, oh, my goodness, you're going to be like the mayor. You're going to be this. No, what I'm going to be is connected.
Mm-hmm.
Because I never know who I'm speaking to, and I never know who they know, and perhaps something that I need might be right at their fingertips. So we don't want to get so involved in ourselves and think so much more of ourselves than we actually are, because there are people out here who choose to just be in a certain state because that's a place of freedom for them. And that's what we have to understand. Freedom exists in different ways, and sometimes people are free. I have this business partner in the United Kingdom, very, very wealthy guy. He said he had had a bad day at work. He'd gone to the park. He said, and he was sitting there, and these are his words, and this tramp came up, and he sat next to me, and he was smelling, and I said, get away from me, you tramp, you know, and he said because he was angry, and of course, a tramp to them is a homeless person, and so he said the homeless person began to engage him, and he says, why are you being mean to me? I am not the person that made you angry. And needless to say, he goes on the conversation, and the homeless person tells him, I may smell, but I'm free. He said, you're not free. And so he said that kind of penetrated him in a way that was beyond words for him. Because he said that homeless person didn't have to worry about rent. He did not have to worry about paying staff. He did not have to worry about a hospital. So actually he was free, and he was happy. So, again, just because, and also the homeless person was an engineer. So you really never, never know what you're dealing with and who you're dealing with.
You don't, because God will send someone in your path and you don't know who it is. And if you don't open that door, you can lose all that opportunity. And it's God, because God, to me, he didn't consider us a small person. Every person is important. And that's the message I want to give anybody out there. Don't allow yourself to come across as someone who is too big to talk to someone. Don't act like you're
absolutely
better than him. That the minute you got, the minute he can take it away. And see, that's what I love about these conversations, Erica, because as I always mostly sometimes tell my guests, no matter what we discuss, we could be talking about, like right now, we're talking about global marketing, but God always plays a part in everything that we do. You can't get around it. You can't get away from not talking about him. I don't care what it is. I was talking to one guy about selling cars, and we still got to the subject of God. I said, see, that's what this show is all about. It's about news and motivation.
Absolutely.
But, Erica, because I'm getting so excited, how much does the government play in the success of businesses in the U.S. and other countries?
Well, you know, I just had an interview in the Bahamas, and they were talking about the increase in VAT taxes, VAT taxes, that the government was imposing upon the businesses there. Here's the thing. As a business owner, as a serial entrepreneur, you cannot get caught up in what the government is doing. Your success is going to be predicated based on the relationships you build, how strong those relationships are, and what you bring to the relationship. That's going to garner your success. Yes, the government may levy or put in a few rules and regulations for small businesses. Most of that is propaganda.
Okay.
Because the big guys have learned exactly how to get around that. For example, if you have a government contract and it says that you have to have a minority set aside of about 35%, well, all the owner has to do is has his wife to set up a company in her name. And he can utilize her company because she's now a minority. She's a woman. See, sometimes we get caught up with minority being racial. Minority is also woman-owned. And actually, women have the ability to be a double minority. If you're an Asian woman, that's double minority. You're a woman and you're Asian.
Mm-hmm.
So when I say propaganda, that's the reason why I say it's propaganda, because they're still keeping all the money and the wealth is not being distributed. That's why it's vitally important that small businesses create an alliance between them and support each other's businesses so that they can pretty much force change with your larger companies. But change cannot be forced with larger companies if small businesses believe that they're each other's competition, because they're not.
Okay.
So the best thing for a business owner, let's say in the U.S., to do would be to start a company abroad, to me. Because in many instances, let's just say the Bahamas, I'm doing a big Bahamas Goes Global initiative that's coming up in April, May, and June. So we're doing a lot of heavy promoting over in the Bahamas for that. But here's the deal. As an international business corporation there, you know, I don't have to pay certain duties and taxes for like 20 years.
Oh, wow.
So that's the reason you have so many foreign people who come over and invest in the U.S. because of the tax breaks. So as opposed to becoming angry, it is time for you to go to their country and reap the same benefit.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. Do exactly what they're doing. Better get up on this A-game. This is nothing to play with. Let's go right back to it. Do your homework. Do your research. They're coming in. They're coming in this country, and they're not playing. It's going global. Everything is diverse now. Nothing is the same, and it's either you on the boat or you're not.
You're absolutely correct. Or you're going to get left behind. You're going to get on and ride, or you're going to get left behind.
And to me, you don't have to have the marketing skills to me, but you still should know a little bit of background about it. Even though I'm a server, I still have to try to know a little bit about what goes on, because I don't deal with the business aspect, but I'm dealing with customers who give their business to us, and I have to know a little. I try to do research on certain countries because, as you were saying, we have to respect each other's cultures, and now we're becoming more diverse at the Marriott. So I have to know, okay, maybe they don't do this. You have to know that most Indians don't eat meat. Maybe they're celebrating something that you should know. You know, you have to be up on everything, and you wouldn't think that you would have to know all that just serving. You're just thinking about beers and maybe food, but it's just so much more to it now.
Absolutely. It is so much more to it. But, you know, when you're going into a foreign market, you have to understand, it's even more critical that you understand the marketing and how to actually infiltrate their market. So for you, I mean, as a foreigner, that marketing is going to be critical to your survival. So you're going to have to do heavy marketing, and you're going to have to make certain that marketing is targeted towards the audience that will purchase your product or service.
Okay. Now, where should one start if they wanted to expand their business in any particular country, Erica?
Where should they start?
Yes, ma'am.
I think they should start by, you know, one of the things I would say is, what country would you like to, see? Or, you know, where would you like to go? It's kind of like the Coming to America movie, take the globe, spin it, and wherever your finger lands, if that's the place you want to go. And then if your place is, let's just say, Japan, then begin to investigate Japan. Research it. Research the products. How many people provide? The Internet is your best tool. If it's a pencil, how many companies provide pencils over there that light up or that are neon when you write out or whatever the case may be? You find out how many companies are doing what you're doing. You study their companies. You go on their website. You look at their profit margins because most times it's published. You go there and see their trends, and then you see what they're missing, because the difference between a large company and a small company is the proximity they have to the frontline people who are purchasing from them. See, people go to small businesses because they have great customer service. And, you know, you could come in and I'd say, hey, Tanisha, how you doing today? How's your daughter? How's your son? How's your family? Have a good day. When you go into a larger company, they don't have that one-on-one person, because a corporation, they take where small businesses connect with the community a little bit more. And that's the advantage. So the objective is to find what they're missing and make that your niche market.
Okay. And because you got most businesses who would send their team in to other countries to when they start to expand, right?
Yeah, they'll send their teams in. But the other thing that they do is what small businesses have not taken advantage of. They joint venture with a company that's already there. And so instead of you saying, let's just say, I'm going to go over to another company, another country, and I'm trying to think of a good example here. Okay, let's say barbecue sauce. Let's just say we're going to go to a country that has barbecue sauce, right? And our product is Tabasco or hot sauce. And we're thinking that it would be great to get our hot sauce in this country. Well, maybe we should partner with a barbecue sauce company that we can add our hot sauce to some of their barbecue sauce to give it a little spice. But with what the customer now sees on that particular bottle of hot sauce is our logo. So now our logo is something that they're starting to see. Then we can venture off on our own if we like. That's what a lot of them will do. So I think that studying and understanding how the big business do what they do, and then for you to try to replicate that on a smaller scale will help your expansion process.
Now, can you, Erica, this is what I wanted to ask. Can you explain, like, the risk of exporting across seas?
What type of risk are you talking about? There isn't a risk if you insure your product. Now, understand here, anything that you do abroad, you can purchase insurance to ensure that whatever it is that you're doing, in many instances, it's covered. Okay?
Oh.
There's a company called OPIC, O-P-I-C, which is Overseas Protection Insurance Corporation. A lot of people don't know that you can get insurance for that. But whenever you're exporting something and they put, well, you know, they'll tell you FOB freight on board, they're responsible until freight is on board. They'll get everything there on that freight, but when they leave it on that ship, they're no longer responsible. That's why you purchase insurance from the shipping company. So that, let's just say, a hurricane or something is in the ocean and it destroys everything out there. All of your products are covered because you purchased insurance. You didn't, you know what I'm saying? So the same things that you operate in your life, having insurance for your automobile in case you get into an accident, it's covered. Having health insurance, just in case I'm sick, I can go to the doctor. Those are the same things that you're going to utilize in your business. So there's not a great risk when you're shipping. If you're shipping with a legitimate freight company, if you purchase the insurance, and if you're following proper protocol on the other side to have your product received, the receiving end of it.
Okay. Sounds like it's a bit much to expand in your business, but it all makes perfectly sense.
It's not as hard as it sounds. It's a process, and once you do it once and you do it the right way and you get a system, then it's going to be easy from that point forward, and I believe that's with anything. You know, when you're learning to clean a bathroom, you know, your mom will come back in and say, you forgot this, you missed that. But once you learn how to do it properly and everything that is a part of cleaning that bathroom, then what's going to happen is she's going to come in and say you did a good job because you have the full process. So the only thing you have to do is obtain the right process. And here's the other thing that I'd like to share with business owners. Don't be afraid to hire someone to do what it is you're not exceptional at doing. Hire you a consultant. You're not exceptional at, you know, infiltrating those markets. Hire a consultant to put together the plan as the step-by-step. This is how you should do it. And if you don't have the time to do it yourself, pay them to implement it. Because here's the thing. Earn your money on what it is that you're exceptional at doing and pay someone to do what they're exceptional at so that you can save yourself time and money.
Yeah. I would, definitely. If I don't understand something, I'm going to go get somebody who does understand. Because if you don't understand it, that's how your business starts failing. And also, speaking of fear, I think a lot of people are afraid to sometimes go into business. Because you think of the word entrepreneur, some people be thinking, oh, okay, I could just go in, get out, make my money. No, and it's not that simple. You have to go in with the plan. You got to relate to the marketers. And no one cares if you have your A's, if you were valedictorian. You got to know how to sell, what you're going to sell, and if the numbers are going to be right. And some people are afraid of all that extra work. Don't nobody want to do the extra work, as you mentioned earlier. We want to be lazy. We just want to get it done. So I think that's what weans a lot of people from being entrepreneurs.
Well, yeah, and not understanding what's going on. And you're right. It doesn't matter whether or not you are valedictorian, salutatorian, cum laude, because all of that is just theoretical. It comes down to the practical application of what it is that you've learned. Can you put it into practical? Can you make it practical? And can you convert it over to the day and age that you're working in? That's why, not that I'm promoting what I'm about to say, and that's my disclaimer. That's why you can have a former drug dealer to build a $400 million empire. Because although he may not have gone to school, he has the ability to analyze and to hustle.
Yeah, I was going to say,
I'm sorry?
I was thinking of that too, Erica, before you were going to say it. It's kind of almost like you have to have the street sense when you're being an entrepreneur.
More so than anything. It's about relationship building. If you are a person who cannot build relationships and maintain them, you're in trouble. I did this this YouTube video on power, and I talked about the three phases of power. You know, you have power acquisition, you have power maintenance. You have to understand that power is just not one-dimensional. It is multifaceted. And I try to educate people about that, my business community. That's why I tell people, follow me on Twitter. Follow me, you know, get on my Facebook page, because all I'm about is helping your business to move forward. I'm connecting you with people who can do that. Yesterday, I was with world-renowned wealth management coach Anita R. Johnson. We were talking about fair wages for women. And, you know, it was a free teleconference for an hour. And it's amazing that we didn't have as many people as she would like to sign up to participate in the call, but there was some relevant information for those individuals who do work on a job, how to negotiate a fair wage for yourself. Because women are paid on average, I know it was on average, 77 cents to every dollar a man earns, but as you got down to African-American women, they earn 66 cents, and I think Hispanics or Asians earn like 50-something cents for every dollar that a male earns. And so she was giving relevant information on how to negotiate this fair wage for yourself. Now, here's the other thing. It's amazing to me that people don't participate in things that they're entitled to.
Okay.
You know, if you're entitled to $1 million, why not take the $1 million? So if it's free, take advantage of free. Because when someone tells you you have to pay $100, you're upset. Well, why does it have to be that much? They should do this for free. When they do it for free, you don't respect free. So people have to take advantage of these calls that they're allowing people to partake in, to educate them. If you don't want to read the book, listen to the conversation.
Okay. Now, Erica, now when you're getting into business, it's all different types of market methods out there. Could you explain some of them, how many there are that people can actually use to expand their business?
Oh, wow. You know, it's a multitude of marketing tools and options to expand your business. And it's going to be dependent upon what product or what service you are actually promoting. That's going to determine how you actually market it. But I'm going to say that I don't think that people utilize the social media for what it was intended for as from the business side of it. I think that, you know, having a great profile on LinkedIn is really good. I believe that utilizing your Facebook for business, if you are a business owner, is the best way. You don't need to post about your family. You don't need to do all that. If you're going to do that, you should have a separate Facebook page for that, but you shouldn't commingle the two. And I think also connecting with the right people on Twitter, you know, don't just, you know, follow everybody and don't let everybody just follow you. What you want to do is make sure that the people that are following you and that you're following, you guys are able to import knowledge to each other and to each other's audiences. And
okay.
That's what's really important when you start talking about marketing from that perspective.
Okay. Yeah. Now that I do understand and have heard people say that you don't want everybody to be on your Facebook page. And because by me promoting my radio show, now it makes me think like, okay, I have all these followers, but do I need to follow all of them back? And I did that, and I was thinking about it yesterday. I was like, maybe I'm doing too much. Maybe I don't need to follow all of you. But do I want everybody in my Twitter? I don't know if I want everybody in my Twitter.
You know, there's this Twitter etiquette rule. If someone follows you, you should follow back. But if you're building a certain marketing group, then you don't want to follow everybody and you don't want everyone to follow you. You don't want to approve that, you know. So you're going to have to make a decision as to what you're actually utilizing your social media sites for. What is my Facebook for? Is it for me and my friends to just chat amongst each other? If that's what it's for, great. You know, is my Twitter page for that, or is my Twitter page for me to get people and to connect with people who are in business like me. What is it for? When you understand what you're using your social media for, then that's going to give you a better chance to obtain what it is that you need from it.
Okay. Yes, ma'am. So, Erica, besides marketing, in what other areas do you consult?
We do strategy and operations. Overall strategy of your business, what's the game plan? How should we execute this game plan? We do the operations part of it. What's step one, step two, step three? As a business owner, you know, I need to have processes in place. You know, if we get a check-in, what's the process for this check? Where does it go? Who gets it first? Do we make a copy and put it in the client's file? Do we scan it and put it in a file on the disk? Do we put it on the jump drive? You have to have all of these processes worked out so that if by chance you get sick and you're not there, people can actually run the business and it keeps moving forward. On the marketing side of it, we do a lot of due diligence before people enter into a market to see how many individuals in that area, immediate area, can actually utilize their product or service simply because people look for convenience. So if we can place your business in a specific area whereby we're having this target audience with a specific income, age group, ethnicity, whatever it is, to utilize your services, then we're going to find that marketing place for you, that the ideal place for location, and then we're going to create the right marketing mix for you.
Okay. Well, you know, I'm thinking about, like, because in the face of today's volatile economic environment, the use of a variety of analytical tools to solve the problem is an important factor of corporate strategic planning. I mean, it's so much that goes hand in hand. You have to, it's a lot, but if you're willing to do it, then hey, it's willing to work for you.
Absolutely.
Now, Erica, when in the overall part of business, how should companies meet market competition or to handle business management?
So how should they meet market competition and what was the last part of that?
Oh, I was asking how should companies meet market competition or to handle business management?
I think that when you start a business, again, you can't look at everyone as your competitor. What you're trying to do is create your niche market, and you're trying to serve that niche. Okay, you're trying to service it effectively. See, there's a plan that your staff knows about as far as the marketing aspect, and then there's a marketing aspect of the plan that only your board members or your upper-level management knows about. So there's two different, and it's leaked in certain phases simply because they don't want people talking about it before it goes to market. See, once something goes to market and you're the first to do it, you're the first to do it. People remember the first, and they remember the last. People in between, pretty much they can't remember them. So you want to just make sure that you're the first to do something. And as far as business management, again, it goes back to your skill set. Are you equipped to effectively manage something? If I'm good at baking cakes and cookies, and I don't know a hill of beans about business, I need to hire me a business consultant to manage this, and I'm going to pay them because I can earn millions of dollars baking cakes, but I can also lose them if I can't manage my money. But if I hire the right people to manage it, the millions are going to continue to come in. So as far as market competition, I just say stay innovative, stay creative, continue to re-engineer and redefine and refine your product or service. Stay ahead of the eight ball.
And again, you just got to be on point. There's no cutting corners or nothing else. It's no sugar on top of it. It's just straight blunt. And you got to have that mind frame. I'm going to get it, and I got to know what I'm going to do with it. Erica, is there any other advice that you would like to give beginning entrepreneurs before we get off air or where they can go get your book itself?
Oh, of course. I would tell beginner entrepreneurs, those who are beginning in business, listen, write a plan, make it plain, execute it, and you have to be relentless about seeing your dream come true. Share your vision only with people who are entrepreneurs find you a mentor that can pull you through the process, because I'm not going to tell you it's going to be easy. It's going to be days where you just think you have just lost everything, but that you lost it for that day. But get back up tomorrow and try it again. As far as connecting with me, getting my book, you can get it off my website, ericaamurray.com. You can get it from Amazon. And just connect with me on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. I'd be glad to have you and be glad to share some tips with you. And I do give those tips through my Twitter and my Facebook page.
Well, I tell you one thing, Erica, it's the woman who will get you to that point. So please definitely check out her pages and get up on the media if you want to get out there in A game. She's the woman to talk to. Erica, I appreciate you for taking out your time to be on my show.
Thank you so much for having me. I just absolutely loved it anytime.
Oh, thank you. And you and your family, you have a blessed one.
You as well. Bye now.
Thank you. Well, my listeners, I hope you take heed. Please check out Erica's pages. As I said before, please grab her book. This is the way for you to enter into the new world where you don't be blindsided. So let's get up on that today. Remember, it's always hump day. It don't have to be a Wednesday to be hump day. It's hump day every day. Start making your plans now. As I always was told, if you get prepared now, you don't have to worry about getting prepared later. So let's make sure we do that. Tomorrow we will have another guest on. Her name is Darcy Keith. So let's stay tuned for that tomorrow at 12 o'clock p.m. And as I always say, you have a blessed one. I thank you so much for tuning in and supporting me so much. It means a lot. If you don't think so, it does. And make sure to check out my fan page at The Bright Side with Technisha. I always try to keep you posted on updated shows. So God bless you, and thank you again.
Thank you for tuning in to The Bright Side with Technisha.
Come back daily from 12 p.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern.
God bless.